Welcome into the Fan pregame here on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590, The Fan. For the next hour, we're doing a very special series-clinching fan pregame. Never been done before. Four series-clinching games on our network tonight. We're going to speak to four guests in the next 55 minutes.
Wait, you want to do Blue Jays, Red Sox?
We're going to try to fit them into.
All right. No guests, though.
No, we can cover that. We've got...
Not a series clinching.
In order of appearance.
It would be, actually.
We messed up. We could have five series clinching games on the network tonight. Okay, in order of appearance, we'll have Mark Spector, who will help us set up L.A. Edmonton. Edmonton with the opportunity to clinch tonight. Then we'll move to Brian Ray, Dallas and Colorado on the network tonight. Dallas with the opportunity to clinch the series. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk to Luke Fox, Toronto, with a 3-2 series lead with the opportunity to clinch on the road in Ottawa. And we'll wrap it up with Gary Lawless. Vegas Golden Knights have the chance to clinch with on the road in Minnesota. And we will try to get them all in and out in 10 minutes flat.
Yeah, not just four guests covering the four series, but four guests covering
the team
can win the series. I don't even know if we planned it that way.
Yeah, we did.
I'll give you credit. I was probably
the whole point. Okay, let's kick things off on our extravaganza with Mark Spector, who joins us ahead of LA Edmonton. Mark, we appreciate you coming on. How's it going?
Going awesome. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. We have a special setup for our show tonight. We're talking to one reporter from every team that has the opportunity to clinch tonight. So you're kicking things off, Edmonton, with a chance to do this four in a row against LA. So I'll just start it off. Like, what's the most number one, biggest important factor for the Oilers tonight to close out this series against LA?
Number one biggest factor. I would say, you know what? I would just say for the Oilers to continue what they always do against the Kings. The Kings win at the start of the series. Edmonton wins at the end of the series. And this series is following a familiar pattern. Edmonton is, you know, you want one thing? Edmonton's, we talk about the Leafs being 1-13 in series closing games. Edmonton's 6-1 in their last seven. The only one they lost was game seven against Florida. So, yeah, one biggest, yeah, sure, that one hurt. One biggest thing, be who you are. These guys know how to close. They're good at it. They know how to beat LA. They're good at it, right? They win at home. They're good at it. So, be who you are. You should be fine tonight.
How hard are the Kings leafing, Spec? Because they were the better team through the first eight periods pretty decidedly. And all of a sudden, they are very much not. So how much of this is like a mental fragility thing? The fact that you've lost to this team three times in a row prior to this one. They were in control, and now it seems like it's spinning out of control for LA.
Yeah, and again, like, I don't want to repeat myself, but this is how it's gone for 4 years now. You know, the Kings play a system, right? Let's get into what's really going on here for me. The system the Kings play, no one else plays this. No one else lines up at center ice quite like the Kings do. They're like Jersey in the, you know, in the 90s. They're like Minnesota in the early 2000s. They play this prehistoric system. And it works great all year because teams roll into LA for one game. It's hard to play against. You got to be concerted and do certain things to beat it. And you know what? Teams don't have that attention span all year long. Then the playoffs start, and they face a good offensive team. And for a couple games, they frustrate Edmonton. And then the Oilers batten down the hatches. They do what the coaches tell them to do. They dump some pucks in, and they end up winning all the important periods of the series. So, if I'm in the Kings room and I'm Drew Doughty, even though he's the consummate pro, and he said to us today, I haven't thought about history for 1 second. All I know is I've seen this movie three times before, and it's playing out again for a fourth time here. This is the same thing we watch every year. Might it have a different ending? It could possibly have a different ending, but it has not had any. The first five games have gone exactly the way it goes every year.
In your conversations with Calvin Pickard, like, what's his, it's kind of a funny thing for him to be in this position. He's been in it a couple times, but this time he's got an opportunity to close out a series. I wonder where you think his confidence level is and what the team believes that they need from him. Just good enough? Just be good enough.
Yeah, you know, Edmonton's about the environment. Like, let's start with Stu Skinner, who's not playing. Stu Skinner, the environment in the playoffs last year was so good that Stuart Skinner got you to game seven of the Stanley Cup final. And in that game on the road, he allowed two. right? That's enough. Like, that's Stanley Cup goaltending. He got them all the way there, except for two games. And when the big game came, he let in two in the road. The environment in front of him was excellent, and he was excellent as well. Now that, you know, Stu Skinner got the games in this series when the environment in front of him was very poor, and he let in a lot of goals. Now Cal Pickard comes in. The team's putting it together. We're in the back half of this series, as I explained. The environment is excellent in front of this goaltender, and he's more than enough goalie to play behind a very good environment. So would Stu Skinner be in this, the way the Oilers are playing right now. The last time Cal Pickard, who is 33, played four playoff games in a row, he was wearing the uniform of the Western Hockey League Seattle Thunderbirds. So it's been a while that he's carried the ball at this time of year, but he's a total pro. He's played forever. He's played for a bunch of teams. There are no nerves anymore when you're that guy. He'll be just fine, I'm sure. And if the Oilers play in the same defensive environment they've been giving him last few games, that should be good enough for him.
Okay, so on the topic of the environment, it is better. It has been better, certainly, for Calvin Pickard. And this isn't like, hey, you should start Stu Skinner and give him that shot, that chance. It's like, how is the environment better? Like, what do the Oilers do to create that environment? They absolutely stormed LA in game five. I think the shots were close to 2-1, if not 2-1, pretty much on the nose. And they are without Matthias Ekholm, and they looked in the first couple games pretty shoddy defensively. So what do they have to do to create that environment? Is it just to, like, put aside the defensive acumen for a second and just be absolutely your full and true offensive selves in order to help your goaltender out the most?
Yeah, I think you got to kind of reverse engineer it, right? I think you got to say the Oilers are best when they have the puck in the offensive zone all the time. They possess it in these playoffs more than any other team in the offensive zone during the whole game, frankly. 5-on-5 and at all strengths, they possess the puck more than any team in the league. So let's start from there. You want to have the Oilers need to have the puck offensively. They're obviously not going to get scored on. So start working backwards. That means the defensemen have to get the puck to a pretty good group of forwards in an efficient and responsible manner. That means you don't cough it up. That means, let's go back another step. When you retrieve a puck in your defensive zone, you know, you don't have to make a fantastic play, right? You don't have to be Bobby Orr taking it all the way up the ice. You just need to make the right play and not put it on a king's stick, as the Oilers did many times in the first 2.5 games. I'm not taking away from the Kings, right? They have some really good players. And if you afford, you know, if you help them, like, they're going to get some goals. Kempe is an unbelievable player here. Fiala's having the best playoffs I've ever seen. They got some really good players. But if you help them, right, if you help them by making tape-to-tape passes to the wrong team, then A, they get a chance. There's a good chance they score. B, you don't have the puck like you wanted it. C, you don't get it to the offensive zone and possess it for a really long time like the Oilers have. So it really starts with, as any coach would say, you know, don't make mistakes. We all get it. It's a game of mistakes. But if the Oilers execute and just get the puck in their hands of their good forwards, that puck's pretty safe for a long time. And as long as they're possessing it, it's really hard for the other team to score when they're cycling the puck, you know, all around Darcy Kuemper. There has been stretches of the last, I'd say, 5 periods of hockey where Calvin Pickard stood around, didn't have much to do.
Speck, I feel like every time we talk, we speak about Evander Kane, and finally he's actually playing hockey, at least this season when we've been talking. Yeah. I think part of the reason why they struggled early is you mentioned, okay, we want to own the puck, but only one line could own the puck, that being the McDavid-Draisaitl combination. But Evander Kane in game two looked like it was a real fast game out there, and all of a sudden since then, I think he's led what's been a good and working middle class for the Oilers. It seems like they have, not through just Evander Kane, but some other performances being lifted and some guys who were definitely under the microscope playing a little bit better, all of a sudden it doesn't feel like Draisaitl and McDavid are on an island. Has Evander Kane helped unlock that middle six?
Oh, yeah. He's on a line with centered by Ryan Nugent-Hopkins with Zach Hyman on the right side. And before I get to Kane, I want to say Hyman's got, like, I don't know, he's got like 22 hits or something in the last two games. So Zach Hyman's a 50-goal guy who's realized, okay, I'm on the second line. I'm playing with Kane on the other side. We're going to rile things up. We're going to throw some hits and make some stuff happen. Nugent-Hopkins is very safe and afforded a lot of time in the middle of that line. So it's a real nice second line with tons of skill. Hyman's a 50-goal scorer. Kane, when he's healthy, is a 30-goal scorer. And Nugent Hopkins had 100 points a couple of years ago. So that's a nice second line. And now on Kane, I mean, I'm on pretty much a tour here. I might as well do it on national television of saying I was wrong.
I wasn't leading you anywhere. I promise. Yeah.
I didn't think in a million years that a guy who missed 10 months could walk in and help the Edmonton Oilers or any team win within the first few weeks. I thought, you know, if they get to the third or fourth round, like, then maybe he'll help. But in my wildest dreams, having covered hockey for 35 years and seen a million guys come back from injury, right? A guy that misses 10 months walks in, and within two games he's helping, and now within three or four, he's one of the better players. Like, whoever heard of that? Mm-hmm. And that's what's going on with Kane. He's a really good player in this series, and he's missed 10 months of hockey. I defy you to find me someone else who ever did that. I didn't see it coming. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, it's been a series with a lot of stories and harmonicas, yes, and Ferraris and Evander Kane. And we'll see how things shake out tonight. We appreciate you coming on to kick off our four interview hour. We got to let you go, though, because we got guests lined up, Mark. So enjoy the rest of the series, and hopefully we chat soon.
Okay, tell Lawless I'll see him in a few days, maybe.
There you go. Thanks so much. Mark Spector, Sportsnet senior columnist. That's our second game of the doubleheader on Sportsnet today. LA on the road to face Edmonton at 10 p.m. puck drop.
When you mentioned Ferraris, were you talking about McDavid and Draisaitl?
No, apparently Evander Kane showed up in a Ferrari. Yep. It was on 32 Thoughts, the podcast, which you co-host. It was a good story. Okay, we're going to get Brian Ray in a few minutes, so we'll take a quick pause. We'll talk about this series. So Oilers, as we talked about, just won three straight to push L.A. to the brink of elimination. Spec laid it out perfectly. Like, the beginning of the series was all L.A., and I think we said that in our pre-show or pre-series preview, that was what they had to do, is get the two home wins, feel like they could have a little confidence. And then Edmonton has just stormed back, and they have pretty much dominated every single period since, outshooting the Kings, I think 79-36 since the third period in game four. And over the last five periods, it's just been all Oilers hockey. So I don't know how that stops. Like, it is a train or a snowball coming down, and LA looks like they might get crushed by it.
Yeah, I kind of feel like a dummy. I mean, speculated out there. What LA does is something you're not accustomed to, I suppose. So you go into LA, night one of the postseason, they're ready to go, they're fully healthy, they, from shift to shift, can do exactly what they want to do, and it's suffocating, and it's stifling, and it's so annoying, and you can see the Oilers just falling into that trap. And I guess that trap was putting us in that trap, because it looked like one team was so much better than the other, that they had the legs, that they had offensive pop, that they had more speed. Just the fact of, you know, inserting Warren Fogle into their lineup after he was in the Oilers lineup, that's just one fast player going from one team to the other and contributing to what was seemingly a mismatch in terms of youth and energy and speed and all that. And then the Oilers just break the dam. And then they're like, oh, this is the same task that we have, again, overcome the last few years, and we're just going to do what we have to do. It seems silly that the Oilers couldn't come up with that earlier on. Mm-hmm. And get to the point where it looked like they were completely toast. They need that late goal to tie and win. But it feels like we should know this about LA. And I started buying into LA when this was, you know, pretty well laid out for us.
So
for
did
a couple
I.
Years
I think we both had LA winning this series.
Yeah.
And I think it was also because of the fact that the Oilers looked a little banged up coming into it.
And the Kings did add. Like, they were a little bit better.
Kings looked good. They were finding some scoring. Their power play was working better. And they... are they really going to lose four straight series to the Oilers? I think that was just the way we believed. But yeah, they got an opportunity to make it four straight if you're the Oilers tonight on home ice against LA. Okay, part two of our preview tonight. This will be the doubleheader on Sportsnet 360, Dallas and Colorado. That's game six with Dallas' opportunity to close out in Colorado. Let's bring in Brian Ray, who's a Stars host and analyst, helps us join us in the show. Brian, we appreciate you coming on. How are you tonight?
I'm doing fine, and I think I'm just as curious as you guys if Edmonton's going to do this again to L.A. And if they do, that is tough sledding on the West Coast for hockey fans.
It is pretty unbelievable that I think we both predicted, Justin and I, that, it can't happen again, but it might be happening again. And we might be seeing something pretty unbelievable, I think, to many people. But your series, the one that we want to talk about, Dallas and Colorado, I think a lot of people – predict one of these teams maybe to go on to win a Stanley Cup afterwards. It's tough to see two of the biggest opponents playing in the first round. That's the way the situation goes. But we'll ask you about tonight's opportunity for the Stars at hand. You know, we're going through talking about all the series clinching opportunities tonight. The Stars have that. What's the biggest thing that they need to do to accomplish that task, to beat Colorado, to close out the series on the road?
It seems to me, as this series has gone along, it's really almost a Jekyll and Hyde thing. When Colorado has been able to redline the RPMs and get their rush attack going the way they want to, they've won those games. Now, Dallas, they've tried to adjust as the series has gone along, and I think what you noticed in Game 5, they've done as good as they have in this series so far. They've been able to deny the middle of the ice at key junctures of this game. And I don't know if I would use the word concede, but it's almost like they're okay if Colorado wants to take the exterior portion of the ice, as long as they don't get interior. So if they can maintain that same defensive structure they had, especially in Game 5, where Colorado really just could not get to a high danger part of the ice on a consistent basis, that feeds into the Stars' game. Sometimes it's pace. You know, Colorado gets to play at their pace versus Dallas slowing the pace down. But for me, it's really come down to denying the middle of the ice. And the big twist for tonight, it's easier to deny the middle of the ice when you can dictate your matchups because you're on home ice. Dallas does not have that luxury tonight. They have won a game in Colorado. Both teams have won on each other's home ice. So it's not like neither side knows how to do that. But I really feel like in the first period, if Colorado's rush attack is going and they are looking threatening between the faceoff dots, especially off that rush, that makes me a little nervous if I'm a Stars fan. If they're getting zone entries and they're getting shots, but there's not a lot from the middle of the ice, then maybe Dallas, they just need to withstand the initial surge and they can get into the flow of the game where they can try and bring things to their end on the offensive side.
So the Stars have survived to this point getting a series lead without Heiskanen, and they survived early on in the series without getting any production really from Wyatt Johnson, Mikko Rantanen, Mason Marchment. You kind of go down the line. Some guys were unable to impact on the score sheet early, but all three of those guys, as I mentioned, and more, getting involved in Game 5. How important was that for the meat of this team offensively to get going in Game 5?
I think it was huge. At some point here, it's funny. It was a series. You're talking about the depth matchup between both of these two teams, but for Dallas, as things went through the first four games, I think we were wondering, all right, when is Dallas's top six going to have a real impact and be able to take over a segment of this series? And they finally did that in Game 5. And I think it also, it uncorks the confidence bottle for a few of those guys moving ahead in this series to finally get a healthy, productive game where there was wave after wave of attack. So that's key. The other side of that, as you just mentioned, the Stars not having some of their top guys going, we're all wondering when Cale Makar is going to have a Cale Makar game on the opposite side. If those guys for Dallas could finally get uncorked, that means that Colorado's defensemen on the other side could also get uncorked. If you're a Stars fan, you don't want it to happen tonight. You don't want it to happen for the rest of this series. But at some point, something needs to break through, it feels like, on that side of the puck. So I think it's huge for Dallas to get there. I think it allows them to finally get to more of that full production, full potential of this series. And moving into Game 6 and Game 7, can they keep that mojo flowing a little bit to try and dictate a little bit of the matchups tonight because they are the road team?
We're chatting with Brian Ray ahead of Stars Avs. That is the second part of the doubleheader on Sportsnet 360 tonight around 10 p.m. We talked a lot about goalies. Connor Hellebuyck, you know, he's kind of the face of like the American-led goalie campaign. And then you've got Jake Ottinger. And I wonder for you, because the Stars team has had so much playoff experience, right? They've been there. But what's his like ability to lead this team throughout the rest of the postseason? How poised is he to go on the next couple maybe months of hockey? Like, is this when we get to see what Jake Ottinger really brings to the table and he gets to kind of cement his name in that world?
There's an opportunity for him here. I really do think so. And I've had a lot of conversations with people about Jake Oettinger just sort of over the course of his career, and he's a very interesting player to cover and watch. I think we have enough data on Jake Oettinger's career to know that he might be a little bit of a streaky goaltender at times. Now, you know, the low streaks are pretty darn good compared to the streaks when he looks like a world beater. I mean, Dallas has a top 10 goaltender in him. But if you look at his career numbers, his numbers in games 5 to 7 of a series are significantly better than games 1 to 4. And it's not like games 1 to 4 are bad numbers, but he seems to get stronger the longer a series goes. And those of us covering him locally in Dallas, we have seen on more than enough occasions, regular season or playoffs, he does have a rise to the occasion gene inside him. And he's only 26. You feel like around that 26, 27 is when a goaltender enters his prime. Does some of that late series rise to the occasion genetics start to filter into other parts of his game as he matures, you know, mentally, physically, as a goaltender? I think we're sort of entering that window to see where it goes. You know, Connor Hellebuck's been there a couple of years. And I think this game against Colorado tonight, and then wherever the series goes from here or to the next round for Dallas, potentially, these are all little check marks along the way to keep watching for Jake Oettinger and sort of how he builds a series as a goaltender, because the production side of it, he gets better as a series goes along. This may be his toughest game 6 that he's dealt with in his career tonight in Colorado, but up to this point, he's been a very good goaltender as a series goes along. That speaks to me a lot about mental maturity. The experience he's had in the playoffs, I think, has helped build that, plays into that a little bit. So he's going to be a very interesting player. I think he's the difference for Dallas in this one. You're trying to steal one on the road against a very good team in a very desperate moment. Your goaltender is going to have to steal a period in some fashion. And that's where Jake Oettinger is going to have to come in tonight.
Brian, we talked a lot about path in the lead up to the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I think Gailish and I agreed that no team would have a tougher path in winning the Stanley Cup than the Dallas Stars, drawing Colorado first and then Winnipeg, Western, and then, you know, the Pacific Division winner, and then a Stanley Cup final. But if they get through Colorado tonight, all of a sudden there's some weird stuff happening with Winnipeg, with Connor Hellebuck's performance and Mark Scheifele being out. And I don't want to get too far ahead, but that path, if the first hurdle cleared tonight and maybe in game 7, it doesn't seem quite as daunting. It feels like every spring can be special for Dallas, but do you see it opening up the same way I do?
Well, first of all, this has been a pick'em series for me, 50-50. I think it has game 7 written all over it. So I just gave you my thought on where I think this series is going. I would say if you thought Dallas had a difficult path to get to the Stanley Cup final, you can say the Colorado Avalanche have an equally difficult path to get to the Stanley Cup final because they also have to go through Dallas. It's just, they're so even. For those of us that have covered the Stars, and I think those of us that are working for a team in the Central Division, this is the Western Conference. This is life in the Central Division. It feels like it. I know it hasn't been that way, but it feels like every year it's 5 Central teams in the West. Two of the top 3 are going to be, one of them is going to be gone in the first round. You're going to have to go through the other one. And then, of course, whoever gets through that, you have McDavid in Edmonton or Eichel in Vegas. You know, we'll see if LA gets it done this year. That's another team that's waiting for you. This is just life in the Western Conference. And if, you know, if it was a different 1-8 setup, all right, you would still have to go through a Minnesota team that's given Vegas problems right now and then probably deal with 2 of those top 4 teams to get to the Cup final. If I'm an Eastern team, whoever comes out of the East is going to be licking their chops because it is a street alley bar fight, it feels like, in the Western Conference to get to the Cup final. And so this is just life in the Western Conference. I don't know if it opens up. I know Winnipeg's having issues with St. Louis, but whoever comes out of this series, if it's Winnipeg, do you feel good because it's Winnipeg? If it's St. Louis that knocks off Winnipeg, how good do you really feel that it's the team that just knocked off Winnipeg? This is just, it's a beating in this conference and more specifically in the Central Division. And I think we've all just accepted it. Those of us that cover it, I don't know what the players feel, But I think, you know, for those of us that cover the Stars, we're like, yep, here we go again.
Yeah, no, we when we put our playoff brackets together, it felt like the Eastern Conference would just be kind of laughing, watching the West beat each other up. And, I mean, looks like Florida is poised to make another lengthy run. So we'll see how they
maybe
feel.
The one team that could hang in the Central if they had to.
Yeah, they might be my one pick. Brian, we appreciate you coming on before a big game tonight. Hopefully we get a chance to chat if the Stars make it through to the next round.
Good to talk to you guys. Enjoy the games tonight. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much. That's Brian Ray, Stars host and analyst, joining us ahead of the doubleheader on Sportsnet 360, Dallas, Colorado. It is on the road, Colorado, looking to continue on this series, which I hope also goes to a game 7.
Got to go to break, but it feels like this is the most consequential game of round one of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
I think,
like,
that's fair.
Very, very possible that the winner is playing in a Stanley Cup final.
Stars won game 2 and 3 in overtime. That's just how close this series has been. But game 1, 4, and 5 were all won by 4 goals. So it's been kind of either it's overtime or get your alt spreads available for the bets. We'll take a quick break. We have 2 more guests. Luke Fox will help tee up Toronto and Ottawa. We know there's a lot at stake there. And then Gary Lawless to wrap things up. Vegas on the with the opportunity to push Minnesota out of the Stanley Cup playoffs. That's all to come on the Fan Pregame. We're back on the Fan Pregame here on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590. The Fan, 2 more guests, only 23 minutes to go. So let's make this quick. Let's kick it off with Luke Fox, Sportsnet NHL columnist.
Okay, we'll get there.
Luke, we are talking to one reporter from every city that has an opportunity to clinch tonight. So welcome to the show. How are the Leafs feeling? How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. How are the Leafs feeling? They seem very focused and serious this morning. We'll see. I mean, I know Leaf Nation doesn't feel the greatest that it, you know, we're on clinch attempt number 3, but hey, they're up in the series. They can take care of business tonight, and it would be on to round 2 against the Florida Panthers, but they have to reverse the momentum here. You know, the Senators game has been building. Their confidence has been building. Their goaltender's been better. Their special teams have been better. So, it's up for, the same old cast of characters to come through and lead the charge here on the road.
What was your prevailing thought watching Game 5 unfold?
Yikes.
Game 5? You know what? I felt bad for the fans. I think that was my strongest feeling. You know, there was good excitement coming into that building on Tuesday, and the Leafs didn't really give them much hope. 0 goals, shutout at home. They filtered out really early, and the ones that stuck around were booing. And it's just like such a unique relationship that this team has with the fan base. I can't think of anything like it in sports. You know, the fans are down on them, and they're up in a series. And really, there's some squandered opportunities. Like, you look at the Eastern bracket, and the Leafs had the first and best chance to punch their ticket to round 2. And now they're going to be the last team to punch their ticket, and the Panthers are getting some rest here. So, yeah, I felt bad. I felt like it would have felt a lot different if they had taken care of business in game 4 or game 5 and just moved on. But now, all of a sudden, the doubt's there. People are nervous.
Looks like Craig Berube is elevating Max Pacioretty to the Tavares and Nylander line tonight. Spent a lot of time, I guess, in the regular season, possibly, is a reasoning. But anything that Craig Berube is doing or not doing that is notable tonight?
Yeah, I think it is a little bit of an eyebrow-raising event, you know, at morning skate, the fact that he didn't make any changes. Back-to-back losses, you got healthy, fresh legs in Nick Robertson and David Camp, and Robertson has a long history of coming in off the press box and popping one in the net, and the team has struggled to score. So I think there was some mild surprise that he's sticking with the exact same lineup, just making that one small tweak. And hey, his explanation is sound. Pacioretty did have some good shifts up with Tavares and Nylander, but you know, we're talking about 4 months ago, 5 months ago, well before Pacioretty got hurt. It was a long time. So you know, he likes his size. The plan here is they want less rush offense, more zone time, puck to the D, try to get the Sens out of their structure, chuck a puck at the net, and then a big body like Pacioretty can hopefully create some chaos or bang in a rebound himself. That's kind of the game plan in terms of offense for the Leafs tonight. So that's what they hope sticks. But yeah, I would say a little bit surprised that we're six games in, and David Camp, I thought he was a pretty solid piece of this team, hasn't even got a sniff of playoff action yet.
So the common refrain, Luke, in situations like this one has been, okay, it's time for the core four. Core four has got to do it or it's not going to happen. I feel like they've improved enough with this roster that the core four could not have an impact on the game. Not necessarily like, hey, they have a terrible game and they can overcome it, but not necessarily score the goal, be the difference maker, and this team could win. Partly that might be opponent because Ottawa's not the most explosive team, but just the way that they've shored up the defense, maybe a secondary scoring, they could win a tight game without the core four actually factoring in. Am I grasping at straws here?
No, I think you're onto something. It's possible because both teams are kind of fine with some low event hockey, Justin. So I think that's probably why you see it that way. If Stolarz stands on his head, if the Leafs defense do what they've been doing all series, they've been playing excellent, like blocking shots, really limiting the Senators' chances. Toronto might only need two goals. So, you know, they've gotten goals from defensemen. Matthew Nyes maybe pots one in. They might not need a big performance from those guys, but it sure would help. Especially, I think they need to get one on the power play. That was the driving force in the first three games, and it's gone ice cold. Not only gone cold, but it's given up two shorties in the past two games. So, you know, if the core four can't get it done at 5-on-5, maybe they could chip in with a power play goal at least.
Has Stolarz crept into the possible concern category for you? He's playing a lot of hockey. We all know that. He didn't play a whole lot of hockey in, you know, every other day succession for this team over the regular season. It seems like Ullmark maybe at this point is now outplaying him, which seems impossible given the first couple games of the series. What's your read here on Stolarz this deep into round one?
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's something to keep an eye on. His third period save percentage especially is taking a dive, so that makes you wonder if he's this is more workload than he's accustomed to. Like, the guy had never played five games in a row. Now he's going to play a sixth game in a row. And it's kind of funny, right, how coaches treat playoffs. What worked for you in the regular season, which was alternating goalies, that theory goes out the window. In playoffs, it's like, I'm picking a guy, I'm riding him until, A, he gets hurt or he looks absolutely horrible. And Stolarz hasn't looked horrible. There's probably maybe game four he wasn't completely great. It's hard to pin game five on him when the guys don't score a single goal in front of him. So, you know, he's not used to quite a workload. I wonder if the leash is a little short. Say Ottawa gets up to nothing and the goals don't look great. Maybe we see Joseph Woll enter this series sooner than later. I think if Stolarz does lose this game, Woll probably start seven.
Oh my goodness. I saw your tweet earlier, you know, Stolarz will start his sixth consecutive game tonight, which is a career first. So the workload is just technically the most he's ever had in a row. It's a load. How's the crowd looking? How's the blue and white mix amongst the Sens fans?
Very similar to game three. And I'd peg it at about 80, mm-hmm. 80 to 85 Sens fans, which is really impressive. I think this city has turned out. I probably wasn't the only one, but when this matchup got settled, I was thinking, okay, the Leafs are going to have 4-7 home games. I thought Toronto would march down the 401 and take over the Canadian Tire Center, and that hasn't happened nearly to the degree many of us thought. Good on the Sens fans. They've really come out and supported for their home team. You know, Brady Tkachuk was saying this morning, it's like, our fans deserved an extra game. They deserved a game six, one more home game minimum. And then he followed through on that promise. And the fans in this building, they got nothing to lose. They're not as scarred as Leaf fans. This has been the louder building of the two by far in the Battle of Ontario.
Luke, you're showing, or at least not showing the opposite, but I think there's enough positivity in your voice and you're not doom casting at current moment like some Leaf fans are. But you will be writing the column if they get reverse swept. Have you started thinking about that?
I've thought about all sorts of scenarios, But unless one, like the players, it's one game at a time. Mm-hmm. I got to write a column tonight about the reverse sweep that may be coming. Mm-hmm. But hey, they could take care of business. It is a tough one. I mean, I'm still betting on the team that has two chances to clinch versus the team that has one chance to clinch. So I will still stick with my original prediction, which is Leafs in seven. But man, they're stressing out the fan base by letting this drag on.
Just a little bit. All right, Luke, we'll let you go. We appreciate your time ahead of game six. Enjoy it. And maybe we'll be chatting doomsday or excitement to play Florida. Maybe also doomsday.
Yeah. Okay. Talk to you before game one. Yeah,
thanks so much. That's Luke Fox of Sportsnet, our NHL columnist on the road. Leafs facing Ottawa with the chance to clinch once again. They had the 3-0 lead. We all know that. The Demons are starting to poke their heads out. Power play, we've seen those numbers float around. Very, very bad. As of late, Core 4 had a pretty tough game in Game 5, but opportunity is still in your hands.
Yeah, I'm excited to see the first couple shifts from the big guys. Like, are we seeing intent? Are we seeing some, like, this stops here energy? Or is it a lot like Game 5? I think that's going to tell you a lot about how tonight's going to go very early on. You mentioned a series opportunity for the Blue Jays. Well, that exists. Mm-hmm. Tanner Houck on the mound for the Boston Red Sox, visiting Rogers Center. Jose Berríos gets the ball for the Blue Jays. So a pitching matchup that favors the Blue Jays here against Houck, who's got a 7.58 ERA and doesn't have a win on the season just yet. So hopefully Jose Berríos can take advantage, and the Blue Jays take advantage of a pitching matchup that definitely goes the way of Toronto here in an AL East showdown.
Yeah, how about last night's game? If you were watching up until the midway mark of the sixth inning, it was 6-0 Boston Red Sox. You might have turned it off. Blue Jays end up winning 7-6 in extras. So a little gritty Blue Jays magic on a Wednesday night, and they're looking to grab a series win, as you mentioned. Tonight we'll have that game on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And finally, for the whole completion of our pregame show where we talk to one reporter in every single city with the opportunity to clinch, let's wrap it up with none other than Gary Lawless, who joins us for the Vegas Golden Knights Insider here as we look at a 3-2 series lead for Vegas. Gary, we appreciate you coming on. Big night.
Hey, thanks for calling me a reporter, Eilish. I miss those days. I was a reporter for a long time. But I can report on the series.
Please do.
From the inside.
Yeah, no, it's a huge game, obviously. Philip Gustavsson is expected mm-hmm. to go for the Wild. He left the game, game five, after two periods. The Wild reported he was sick. So Marc-Andre Fleury played the third and overtime, gave up the winner to Brett Howden, and Pavel Dorofeev left that game for Vegas. He won't play tonight. Rhys Cassidy calling it a lower body injury and terming him as day-to-day.
100 Stanley Cup playoff games for Vegas the other night. 100. This is old hat now, Gary. Pretty remarkable that they've played so many in their brief existence. But I wonder how the Boldy-Kaprizov combination stands up to all the other challenges Vegas has faced, because they have been brilliant in this series so far and definitely making it more interesting than I thought it would be.
Well, the most dangerous combination Vegas has ever faced is McDavid and Draisaitl. And when Vegas beat them in round two on their way to their Stanley Cup in 22-23, the games never felt out of reach. Like, Vegas would be up by a couple in the third. And, talking to the players, talking to the coaches, management, everybody held their breath until they heard the final horn. They always were worried that those guys could reignite and get right back in the game. And it hasn't been, they haven't been quite as dangerous as that. But that being said, Kaprizov and Boldy and Eriksson Ek, you know, he doesn't have as many points as them, but he's been standing in front of the net, or he's made a play to keep the puck in the offensive zone, or drag somebody into the corner. Lots of things that don't show up on the score sheet. He's been massive, won a ton of draws in the series as well. These guys rank right up there with the best line the Golden Knights have played in the playoffs. And you mentioned 100 wins or 100 games. Tampa Bay, since 17-18, they've won 13 series. Vegas has won 11. If Vegas wins tonight or in game seven, they'll have 12 playoff series since one. They will have won 12 series since they joined the NHL in 17-18.
And Justin had Vegas and Tampa, I believe, as his Stanley Cup final for a good reason.
Tough start.
But yeah, well, half of it's still in there. But, you know, a lot of playoff experience means one thing. You just talked about the score sheet, and it's hard to ignore Jack Eichel's kind of lack of production on the score sheet. I know he's -6.0 goals after a 94-point season. Like,
yeah, we froze.
What? Oh, you did freeze a little bit, but we can hear you. So, oh, there you are. You look great. Looking good. Is there something Jack Eichel can do to impact a little bit more in the series, or is he doing enough off the score sheet that those that are, you know, just tuning in to look at his Conn Smythe odds won't be too upset about?
Well, he was massively impactful in game five. Set up Carlson on the shorthanded goal, and it's Kaprizov is trying to check him. And Jack just leans into him. Like, people don't consider Jack big. He's a power forward as well as a number one franchise center. He's a big guy, and he's very strong. He leaned into Kaprizov, would not allow him to get to the puck, and then made the pass over to Carlson. And then on Mark Stone's goal, Jack goes into the corner and takes one hand off the stick to push Brodin away, and then makes the pass with the other hand. So impactful on those two goals. He's coming alive offensively, but Bruce Cassidy has said a number of times in the series, he's like Jack's game. That being said, Jack Eichel needs to produce, right? So he had two assists in the last game, an assist the game before. So three assists over the last two games. I think the next thing you'd like to see from him is for him to score.
How does the Dorofeev absence impact things in this series and tonight?
Well, Kelly McCrimmon's done a real good job in giving Bruce Cassidy different flavors in his depth. Early in the series, Victor Olofsson was playing. Bruce Cassidy decided he had like a heavier player and a little bit of a different matchup, so he puts Tanner Pearson in. Pearson set up Howden for the OT winner in game five. And now with Dorofeev out, well, Olofsson has played the elbow on the power play. He's a top six guy. He's scored. If he had been healthy this year, he would have scored 20. So it's, Pavel's the leading goal scorer on the team in the regular season. They'll obviously be missed, but the general manager has given the coach pretty good options in terms of depth, because it's the playoffs. You're going to have injuries.
Where is Adin Hill's game at? I haven't obviously watched every Golden Knights game this year. Save percentage overall pretty good, around, you know, where you expect, up top 20 in the league among starters. I've seen some soft ones so far in these playoffs. So where's his game?
Well, the number one stat in the playoffs, Justin, is wins, and he's got three wins. He only allowed two goals in the last game, and that was the best statistical game of the series for him. But, you know, Adin Hill, he does have that Superman game in him where he's not just, letting the puck hit him, or he's also kind of using his athleticism to really be fantastic and out of this world. They don't want him to play like that. They want him to play, a pretty stable and predictable game. But he's got one of those real fantastic showings in his bag. And if you're Bruce Cassidy of the Golden Knights, you hope it comes out tonight.
Gary, you don't have to worry about curses and stuff like that in Vegas because, 100 playoff games, Stanley Cup in the first couple years of existence. Like, you don't really have those skeletons in the closet. But I wondered what fans and people around the team thought when Marc-Andre Fleury entered the game yes. The other night.
Well, he got some chance. They still love him in Vegas. They always will. He talked about that after the game. He said, I didn't expect that. It's the playoffs. I kind of thought that was behind us, but he said, I guess this is always going to be a special place for me. So people enjoyed it, I think. To me, it's at this stage, it doesn't matter who's playing for the other team. You want your team to advance and get to the next round, but people are going to cheer for who they're going to cheer for.
Well, hopefully they advance. We get a chance to chat with you in the second round, Gary. We appreciate your time tonight ahead of a big game, and enjoy it.
Thanks, Justin. Thanks, Ailish. It was fun to be with you.
Good luck with the next 100.
Yeah.
I won't be around for 100.
I think you might be.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? Maybe. Yeah. I just got this jacket, so I got to get a few.
It's nice.
It's got to get a few games in.
There you go. All right. Thanks, Gary. Appreciate it. That's Gary Lawless, Vegas Golden Knights insider.
Life's been good out there in Vegas.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Really good. New jackets.
Part one of our doubleheader on Sportsnet 360 is 7:30 start. So just around the corner, I want to give two things before we wrap up. Emily Kaplan reporting that the Rangers are in advanced contracts to name Mike Sullivan the head coach. Sources tell her and Kevin Weeks it's expected to be one of the richest coaching contracts in NHL history that just tweeted out a couple of minutes ago.
Yeah, no reason for that one to not reset the standard, I would suppose.
Yep.
A lot of money in New York, a lot of pedigree for Mike Sullivan. He's the type of guy who could take a year off if he liked. He could use his leverage if he wanted to. You're going to a division rival.
He wanted to stay in the East. We know that because I think Vancouver was looking, poking around, right?
Sniffing around too?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, he said straight up, I'm staying in the East.
They can sniff regardless of that.
It ain't going to work. Looks like he's going to be the head coach of the New York Rangers. Okay. A couple best bets before we wrap. And we basically accomplished the unthinkable task, four reporters or insiders in a 50-minute
That is
show.
An important distinction, Ailish.
Quick best bets. I have two for you, and it depends if you're a pessimist or an optimist. So we have the We Won Game 7 parlay. So that's every team to push this series back to a game 7.
Okay,
clearly.
So you need a wild win.
So you need a wild win. You need a Sens win. You need a Colorado win, and you need an LA win. That's your parlay. Only 15-1.
Yeah.
Or I'll give you the it's over parlay. That's 12-1.
How is it that close?
That's for Vegas to win tonight, for Toronto to win tonight, for Dallas to win tonight, and for Edmonton to win tonight.
The home ice thing keeping that closer than you'd expect, mm-hmm. right? Because Vegas on the road.
I will give you one bet that is not found in any of these books. Over, under 1.5 game sevens after tonight.
Over one, under 1.5 game sevens. I think St. Louis is going to win game 6 without Shifley. So there's one.
No, I'm talking about in these four
games tonight.
Oh,
I thought you meant total. Sorry.
Tonight.
I will say over.
Okay.
So I think Colorado and...
So you think at least two teams will win tonight in our... It's
Colorado and either Minnesota or Toronto.
Okay.
Or Ottawa. Wow. You? Over?
Yeah, I think over.
Which ones are you picking?
I think that Colorado will win tonight, and I think that...
Sounds like Brian Ray thought Colorado was going to win tonight. He kind of said that, actually.
I think Minnesota might win tonight.
Interesting.
Okay, let's go to yours.
Okay. I guess I belie my immediately with this pick.
Interesting.
I just think the Stars at +170 is pretty crazy. Like, I'm not necessarily going to play it because I won't say it again. But Stars 170 with the chance to win a series.
I didn't see that one. That
feels like there should be some urgency.
Crazy.
Ottinger's been better than Blackwood, I guess, as the series continues. It just seemed like a pretty interesting price, almost 2-1 for Dallas to win. More interesting than an actual play for me. However, Conn Smythe additions, though, to the portfolio. We were going through it a bit
today.
We
found one that is absolutely astonishing.
Which I will get to. I will start first with the goaltenders, though. Like, I do think if Dallas wins, Ryan Ray didn't want to say it, I think the path cleared for them. Jake Ottinger probably has to be brilliant for them to win the Stanley Cup. 18-1, I think that's the best bet in the Western Conference. And in the East, Florida looks like head and shoulders above everyone. Mm-hmm. Florida, draw a line, doesn't matter who's next. Bobrovsky, they're not going to give away the Conn Smythe this year. Bobrovsky might win 18-1. And that player that we were talking about is Sam Bennett. 460-1. He has the same stat line
five
as Matthew
points
Tkachuk.
Five games.
3 goals, 5 points. Same as Matthew Tkachuk.
460-1.
Probably been better
to
this point. 460. And Tkachuk's like 20-1.
Yeah. We put a lot down on Mr. Sam Bennett.
Wow. Decent.
A unit. Whatever you think that is.
Different
it's been
for
placed.
Different people.
Holland Landing's very own. My guy. Okay, we'll see you tomorrow with maybe some game sevens, maybe not. Enjoy the night.